This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss Penn State's bid in the Peach Bowl and their matchup with Ole Miss, talk about James Franklin's first comments after hiring a new offensive coordinator, and discuss transfer portal season, what everybody's here for, this week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber of the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. And we are just patiently staring at Twitter for the next month.
You know what, John? This is it. We made it through bowl selection. That's a reason to celebrate.
That's right.
We had one quiet day, right? Penn State officially made the OC hiring final on Friday. Nothing significant happened.
Hold on. You made the joke last episode that you didn't have anything to do. I had to cover the men's basketball game, and they lost to a 22-point underdog, the worst loss, according to KenPom, in program history. The only time they've ever lost
well,
to a team
John,
outside the top
That's 100. A you problem. That's a you problem.
It
that's
very
not
much
a Penn State football program. That is a Penn State
very
hoops
true.
Issue. But after Saturday, then we made it to Sunday bowl selection. Thoughts on the Peach Bowl off the bat, John? Do you like it? Do you not like it?
Do I like it for me? Yes, very much so. Flights are easy. Travel is easy. You're home for Christmas. You're home for New Year's. It's kind of the perfect setup for us. It is pretty ideal from that standpoint. And before I give any more details, don't forget, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit that thumbs up button down below. Hit the subscribe button. It always helps us out. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating and leave us a review there. We'd really appreciate it. But this is pretty ideal for us. For Penn State, I think this might be the most optimal outcome. I can't think of many other that would have been a lot better.
Tell you what, yeah, no, I'm with you. Saturday night, it was getting a little bleak when it was like...
Yeah, when it looked like it was going to be Georgia.
Well, Georgia, and then it was also like Liberty, right? You had that. And then
it was the two extremes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like, ooh, this is going to be like Selection Sunday might be a little crazy. And then Sunday, about an hour before, like we got the New Year's Six, or I'm sorry, we got the playoff Final Four revealed. But then in that like 2-hour period with the New Year's Six, then I was like, what about the Fiesta against Oregon? Like that would have been a lot of fun. Like to me, that would have been tremendous. But I'm with you. The Peach Bowl, logistically, it's great for us. It's an easy trip for us. But on top of that, John, you get James Franklin versus Lane Kiffin with what I'm saying is the early narrative of this game is that someone has to win a big game between these two. Like that to me is kind of the funny narrative of this game. And we had a chance to talk with both coaches Sunday night on the bowl Zoom. They always do these
two very different personalities, like
very different personalities,
more opposite personalities.
James Franklin just stepped off a plane when he talked with us on Sunday. Lane Kiffin said they were in the middle of an official visit weekend and they were kind of wrapping that up. But you put all that together and it's like, yes, okay, you've got the portal going on. You've got to figure who's playing, who's maybe opting out, all these things. And, oh, yeah, let's talk about this matchup. And I think Kiffin put it pretty nicely when he was like, yeah, we really don't know much about Penn State right now. Like, we're going to have some ops people gather some information and then we're going to formulate our game plan from there. But that, I think, is just a good summation of this crazy month of December, right? It's like you're going in a million different directions. And on top of that, you're trying to keep your roster intact. But, oh, yeah, let's talk about this bowl game that is, you know, when we're recording this, what, 25, 26 days away? Feels like an eternity.
30th. Today's the 4th. I thought today's
we
the
are not math majors here at the Nittany Dispatch.
It's been a rough weekend.
But I do think like it's going to be interesting because as Lane Kiffin said, he does not anticipate that they'll have any opt-outs because he's put it pretty nicely. He's like, yeah, I don't really think the way our roster is constructed right now, there are any guys that are, you know, first-round potential. James Franklin said they're still having conversations about opt-outs, which again, you look at the first-round potential on this roster. Plus, you potentially have four top 50 guys, right? Will they have all of them? We will see. As of recording this Monday afternoon, no one has opted out. No one has made their NFL decisions known. Two players have hit the transfer portal, but we'll get to that in a bit. But, John, it's one of those days where everything's just coming at you fast.
Yeah, and I think the opt-outs thing is really interesting. Lane really did put it as nicely as he could. He's like, I don't think any of our, I'm paraphrasing, he didn't say exactly this, but essentially said, like, I don't think any of our guys are at that level, right? Like,
Yeah.
to be worth
Number
considering that.
11 Ole Miss, he's like, we don't have that first round potential this year.
Yeah, which I mean is a good indication of the talent gap, I think, at least at the upperclassmen level or the draft eligible level between these two teams. Now, it will matter if those guys end up playing for Penn State. We'll see if they do, because that's a whole other discussion. That, like you mentioned, James said they're still having those discussions. But James also spoke about new offensive coordinator Andy Kotelnicki, right? Like, and how this process came together and what his next month is going to look like. And I think that's really interesting because I asked him, I think it was a couple weeks ago after a practice, about the advantage of being able to, like, know who you want to hire before other people do, and like the advantage in the market. There's also an advantage after the hire is made, right?
Well,
Like
John, but he told you
they,
he didn't think there was much of an advantage to.
he said there was a little one. But with that, I listen, we can agree to disagree. He hired his offensive coordinator before
He
championship
had his
Saturday,
guy
so
by
I would argue,
December 1st. Love it.
yeah, I would argue that's a pretty big advantage. But the even bigger advantage is now he's at Penn State for bowl prep, right? He gets to watch how things work. He gets to be a part of it. He gets to watch and listen and get to know guys and get to know players, get to know coaches, get to know how they do things. And that's really important. James mentioned how they did that with Manny Diaz, who is someone that we're also going to be talking about, I assume, later in this episode.
He did not mention John, but they also did that with Kirk Shiraka, but he didn't mention that.
Yeah, I don't think he's probably going to bring that one up. But this will help Kotelnicki get there, right? Like, it'll help him be ready as soon as the Peach Bowl ends, that January 1st, December 31st, whichever, day they get back to work, like, he'll be full throat into it, like, ready to go, knows exactly who he is, knows exactly what the holes are in the team and where they need to go.
Figuring out what the culture is here and right how much of a cultural fit he is. That's kind of the phrase that James Franklin was
Well,
using to
especially
describe
because
that.
he's been in the same culture for a decade, right? Like,
Right.
this is
And I
not
think that is significant. Like you take away, I mean, right, if we think about it from even our professions, right? I've changed jobs a lot, especially early in my career. And every place you go, it's a little bit different, right? You're going somewhere and it says, well, I used to do it this way. Well, we're doing it this way here. So you have to adapt and adjust. And I think that's true for all of our listeners, right? Whatever walk of life you're in, there's going to be changes. It's going to take time. There is that acclimation period. It's true. It's real. But the good news for Penn State is that you're not losing any time because you're going through the acclimation period really in this next month. And it's about figuring out who you have on this roster, but it's also about figuring out the rest of this coaching staff, which, as you and I talked about last week, when you hire an offensive coordinator, so far there's no position title, right? As some of, they're calling him Coach K. Some people I've noticed that's kind of been a little bit of a thing. So
I
there's
have
no,
not seen this.
yeah, that's been a bit of a thing, especially I noticed when he was at Kansas. That was, which I was like, okay, basketball school, I get what you're going for here, but there's no position coach title associated with him right now. I do think James Franklin was asked about that last night. I can't, did you, I think, was it you that asked him,
Yeah.
John, on the Zoom?
And to be clear, it was the second question in the presser, and it may or may not have been me getting my hand up as quickly as possible so I can continue watching the Eagles game that was going on in front of me and making me angry.
How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, it wasn't good. I fight back.
Anyhow, so I think, yeah, so you asked him about the like who's going to coach the quarterbacks, and James Franklin said, well, like they've had some discussions, but there's nothing finalized at this point. But then later on in the press conference, I think he gave a pretty good answer when he said something about along the lines of they kind of view Andy's role that he'll be able to float around like that of an NFL offensive coordinator, which presumably does not tie him into one position. I think what
I thought that
many
was interesting.
yeah, go ahead.
And I'm curious what you think about this, because he said that within, I read it at first when I went back and listened the same way you did, right? That this could be the case moving forward. But when you listen to the, so he's answering a question about the next month specifically. So I couldn't tell, was he just saying he can float around for the next month and get to know people, or is like he can float around forever, right? Like for his whole tenure and do that, right? Because the question, it was within the him talking about like Manny Diaz and the benefits of that, because he was asked about like what the next month looks like,
Yeah, no,
right? And I
I did
think
not.
that was part of it.
I didn't take it that way, John. And maybe, yeah, maybe that is, maybe that's what he meant. Because I think I actually, I have the quote in front of me. He said, I think Andy, like he did at Kansas, is really going to approach this like the head coach of the offense, which again, John, you and I know that's been the important
Yes.
comment. He wanted to hire the head coach of the offense. And then continuing his direct quote, James Franklin said, he's had experience really coaching almost every position on offense and coordinating from every position on offense, which I think is also going to allow him to float almost like an NFL coordinator in some ways. So,
and that was the second half of an answer about the whole month, right? Like what he's going to do. And so I couldn't, this is something that next time I talk to James, I do want to ask for clarification about, because it is like, it was one of those things, because we didn't get a second question, right? And because I asked the second question of the presser, like,
it was short. It was like a 12-minute.
And this was, mind you, after James spoke alongside Lane Kiffin in the like Peach Bowl intro joint presser, whatever you want to call it. But this was like, essentially, this was just the Penn State beat asking questions to James. And I would love some clarity on that, because I'm not 100% sure, honestly.
Yeah, I do think we're going to find out in the next month. We're going to have to. Maybe it'll drag a little bit later, depending on if there's other staff movement, but kind of what's their plan for Danny O'Brien, the grad assistant who's thought of so highly. Danny was allowed to be out on the road. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the other thing, because they have a guy that the quarterback mm-hmm. really trusts. And I assume you were about to say this, as you, I believe, included in your story, that he was out on the road recruiting Ethan Grunkmeyer. We know that Grunk has a good relationship with Danny O'Brien. We know that Drew does as well. We know that Bo does. Like
the entire quarterback room. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he can work on the field with those guys, right, as a graduate assistant, as a GA in his current role. And he has another year where he can be a GA. And I don't know if there's – I know that the old cap on what you could pay GAs is now gone. I don't know if there's any cap at all. I'm going to be honest. I don't know that. Because they change constantly. But if they can just give him a pay bump, let him kind of act like an 11th assistant. You're obviously not allowed to have an 11th assistant, but kind of have him act like it on practice and work with the quarterbacks in that way. Because usually GAs aren't guys that you're like, yeah, he's ready to be a position coach at this level. Right.
But
they clearly believe that's the case here. Right.
That was the Deion Barnes path. And I think we know how highly James Franklin thinks of Danny O'Brien. He's made that very clear. We also know what, like you said, what the players think about him. But yeah, this is a really important time for him, I think, too, and kind of the work that he does with Drew here in this next month. I mean, we saw it in the two games when James Franklin was involved with the quarterbacks, as was Danny O'Brien, after the firing of Mike Yurcich. So this, to me, is going to be kind of the next domino of figuring out what Danny O'Brien's role is in all of this. But I talked with Ethan Grunkemeyer on Friday, and he said it was really nice to see Danny out and to see him and at his school and, you know, kind of trying to visit with him and get some time with him. The expectation is that, you know, Franklin and Coach K, if I start, maybe this will get some legs if I keep saying it.
I'm not going to do it.
That they will be together for the in-home visit. But when I had talked with Grunkemeyer, he had not connected with Coach K just yet, so they were still kind of working to do that. They were going to get the commits on Zoom together with him as soon as possible. So you got that, John. You've got the recruiting piece of all of this that continues. But while we're talking about coaching staffs and staff changes, do we open up the bag?
The Manny Diaz bag.
Yeah, do we? And I say bag as in like there's more to come. Actually, I say box. It's more like Pandora's box. But when I say bag, people are now going to think it's money. And now I'm going to have to go on my rant about how it's not money. But
yeah. It's never going to be money. No, we saw some reporting that Manny Diaz and Anthony Poindexter were on like a list of potential candidates at James Madison. And then a flight tracker situation occurred that was not either of those two. Like it had nothing to do with Penn State.
I have not been tracking flights, John. You and some other.
Listen, it was in the. Listen, in my defense, it was in the outlet that reported the you know them as potential candidates. It was there. Like that's where that was.
I actually had someone ignorant on Saturday. I had family in town, and I was like, oh, geez, please just do not let this happen today. Let's get the house.
I had someone who
Christmas.
Is aware of JMU's not their athletic department, right? Someone who is. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be careful of how I phrase this, right? Point me to the flight tracker. They are not, like, this was not someone, like, in the know or anything, but they were curious, right? Like what is this? And I was like, I don't know. Time to look into it. And you look into it, and you pretty quickly dismiss a lot of things there. But then it was reported, like I said, that was not, it was not Manny Diaz being flown down by a private jet to James Madison. It was not Anthony Poindexter being flown down by a private jet to James Madison. Not saying they're not candidates. Not saying they haven't had communications. I don't know, and I don't believe you do either at this point. Correct me if I'm wrong, of course. But like,
The thing I think you got to remember with Manny Diaz is that, and again, we'll be frantically Google searching or Twitter searching this as we talk, but the Duke search is still underway. Right. Yes. And that's the thing to keep in mind. Still very much in play for him. To me, that makes,
by the way, a lot you of mentioned sense. Twitter searching. If people see me looking to my right, it is because I'm Doom making scroll. Sure no one is going in the transfer portal or going to taking a head coaching job at Duke while we're doing this.
Yeah, this is that time of year. It's the month of December. I just do not like it at all. It's just chaotic all the time.
Especially this first week.
Yeah, and this is kind of the parameters that have been put in place that the schedule makers put, and no one likes it, but here we are, and everybody has to deal with it. I do think, John, because I know people love to ask about, well, Manny Diaz, and what are the odds that they have him next year? We're all kind of in a holding pattern right now with all of this stuff, right? Some of these searches, they happen really quickly. Some of these searches, they drag out. Some administrations are a little more close to the vest, as we've seen James Franklin time and time again plays it really close to the vest. We also see sometimes our agents love to float things, and you know they like to kind of pump up their guy. That's how this whole thing kind of works. So
that would never happen around here.
Well, you know the deal, John. You know this is the crazy season, and everything is happening. So I think at this point, Penn State, they're going to kind of keep rolling with what they have. You've got the bowl practices, which James Franklin said are kind of like a spring ball period right now until they really get the game plan in place for Ole Miss. You're doing these developmental practices. But of course, you have guys who are interviewing elsewhere in between during these times. Like, that's normal. That's not anything that should be alarming or surprising.
Let's take a quick break from the podcast to talk about the good people over at Voodoo Brewing Company at State College, located at 201 Elmwood Street. Voodoo is one of Audrey and I's favorite spots to grab a drink, whether it's in the summer, whether it's in the winter, whether it's in spring or the fall. You get a nice view down there by the stream. You can sit outside, have a drink. You can sit inside. They've got food now at the Voodoo Kitchen. It really is just a wonderful environment to be in.
I haven't complimented their lighting yet, John. I appreciate their outdoor, the Edison lights. I always like the lighting. You can always see it when you drive by 322 as well. I was coming from running errands this weekend, and I was like, oh, the lights are on. I should go to Voodoo. And I should have gone. But transfer portal season just drives us all to drink. So maybe I will be better suited getting beers to go this time of year. But regardless, stop by, check them out, get yourself a Metmosa or any one of their other beers. There are a lot to choose from. Also some cocktails, which John likes to engage in from time and time again.
The slushies over there are also delicious. It's a great place to be. You can go for trivia night on Tuesday nights, bingo night on Thursday nights, both at 6 p.m. You can sit outside as it gets colder. They have the fireplaces out there for you to heat up by, have a nice beverage outside. That's Voodoo Brewing Company, located at 201 Elmwood Street in State College. Back to the show.
But then you kind of get to this point where you say, okay, and I asked James Franklin Sunday night about the transfer portal. And I said, you know, are there any positions of need, of areas of need that you expect to address in the portal? And he did not give me a direct answer. But, John, I think you and I, he kind of went the, well, they have to be a good cultural fit. We're looking for the best player available, all those kinds of things. And I was like, well, I'll just say it then. You're looking for wide receivers. My words, not his.
Yeah, unsurprisingly. No way. What a shock. Uh-huh. Looking for wide receivers and a team that desperately needs wide receivers. But no, I think it is fair to make that assumption, right? That they're looking for wide receivers. We've seen reports that they've contacted receivers already today. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're both aware of some contact they've made with receivers too. Like, they clearly need to improve at that position, and it's priority number 1, 2, and 3, if I'm in charge, right? Like, if I'm making those decisions, I'm trying to get at least two receivers in the portal, like minimum. Because I believe in Dante Cephas.
We know you believe in Dante Cephas. You are the Cephas hype train conductor today, tomorrow,
gonna,
and always.
I was going to say, we're not going to bring up the text I sent earlier today. But I trust Trey Wallace if he's healthy, which is, at this point has to be a concern. And I trust Keandre Lambert-Smith if he's back, right? Like,
in, which we don't know.
Right, we don't know of any NFL decision. He's a senior.
He could, could go anywhere. He could be here. He could go to the NFL. He could go elsewhere. Right, like that is the kind of the reality of that position. But we do know, John. We do know that there is one wide receiver who is not planning on being here in the future, and that is Christian Driver, who entered the transfer portal on Monday. Was one of two Penn State players, again, as of recording this at about 3:45 Monday, was one of two players to do so, the other one being the first portal entrant of the new season for Penn State, punter Alex Paquetta. Not a surprise on either one to me. Like,
no,
to me, this is interesting because, one, I mean, I got the snap counts for the season in front of me. Christian Driver, 48 total snaps per True Media. 27 of those came on offense, 21 of those came on special teams. Again, in a receiving core that had a lot of questions, a lot of issues, he was not able to get on the field much. And then I think on top of that, you say, well, okay, he was also playing safety last year, and you knew you were going to have issues at wide receiver. And remember, this time last year, he was just making that position switch to the other side of the ball. So kind of an interesting two-year career here for him. So he's in the portal, left to kind of see. Now, again, the caveat here is that players can return to Penn State if they so choose once entering the portal. However, I do not think that's the case here. Alex Paquetta had essentially issued a statement Monday, like wishing everyone well, thanking Penn State for the opportunity here, for his time here. And both were immediately wiped off of the Penn State roster. So
yeah, it was very quick.
That's a new wrinkle because I wanted to check something with like number of games played or something like that.
I know. That's why that I hate and that they do that. Like I can't find that info easily.
Yeah, I hit the 404 error message on Penn State's website, which is a new wrinkle because usually they used to leave the guys there and then kind of in January we'd sift through everything.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're coming back.
No, neither do I, but I do think both are interesting, right? I thought, you know, by the end of the season, Christian Driver was repping, not like with the starters or anything, but fairly high up with the receivers. I thought he was someone that would have a chance to potentially crack the rotation at some point next year. Obviously, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than we know with all these decisions, right? Like, players have different motivations. Like, you got to figure out where you're at on the depth chart. Maybe that isn't the case. Maybe I'm wrong about
like played his high school ball in Texas, right? Like to me, this was always one of the more interesting fits. But the relationship, of course, the connecting point was always his dad, Donald Driver, played one season for James Franklin in Green Bay when Franklin was the Packers wide receivers coach. So there was a little more that you could kind of say maybe it makes sense here. But yeah, to me, John, the Paquetta one now brings up what's become my favorite talking point this year, which is
I just want answers.
How much eligibility does punter Riley Thompson have left? Because as of us talking, we do not know. This is one of the more bizarre things that we've encountered or that I've at least encountered on my time on the beat.
To be clear, you're talking about sophomore senior Australian punter Riley Thompson, right?
Yes, who is an All-American candidate last year as a freshman.
Yes, but
that all settled in
this year at Penn State.
Obviously, the weird thing here is because he was coming from Australia, and when actually did his eligibility clock start? That's why this has been confusing. FAU had him listed as a transfer. He comes to Penn State, and we were told he's a senior. I'm like, hello, we just skipped a few years here. So then I had asked Riley Thompson this year if he knows if he has any eligibility left, and he didn't want to discuss it because he was focused on going 1-0 that week.
Which like feels like a fairly straightforward question.
Right. And then I've also asked Stacey Collins about it later on this year, if he knew, and he said they were still looking into it. So, I mean, again, this could be a genuine like unique circumstance where they just do not know. He walked on senior day, but we know walking on senior day means nothing anymore. Because of COVID years and all of this. But gosh, I guess technically he wouldn't have a COVID year because he wasn't on an FBS Division I roster during the 2020 season.
But he was, so if they're counting those years though, like where he would have had eligibility.
Where he was out of the country.
In Australia, at Haileybury College, right? I think that's the name of it. Sorry if I got that wrong.
I don't know.
If they're counting those years as years of eligibility, 2020 was one of those years. And that's the COVID year. So I would assume that if he's using up a year of eligibility that year, he gets the same waiver that everybody else does. And maybe that's where they're getting the extra.
Do the rules apply in Australia that they do in the US?
Well, this is what I don't understand. He was not playing football in Australia. Like, he should have eligibility. He should just have 4 years of eligibility in the United States. If I'm missing something, please, someone email me at jsobber@centerdaily.com. Reply to us
on
Twitter.
You're an expert on Australia eligibility transferring to the U.S. Please reach out.
Because my interpretation of it, and I'm not proud of how much time I've spent looking at this and how much time I've been looking at NCAA rules trying to figure this out. My understanding, and don't forget, I'm an idiot. So this is very
well. That goes without saying, John, but thank you.
Yeah, I did just say that Oregon's the best team in college football a week ago. But my understanding is that he should have 4 total years in the United States. So he should have 2 more years or 3 more years to play 2 seasons, essentially, right? So he can redshirt a year.
He senior day like 12 times.
But I think this is the case, right? I think he has 2 seasons left to play, but no one is saying this. I haven't, to be clear,
nobody knows.
No, nobody at Penn State has told me anything. No one has told anyone anything as far as I know. But based on my understanding of it alone and based on what he played, because it was Australian rules football, which is not the same sport. Based on my understanding of that, he should have 2 more years of college eligibility. And I don't understand why he just – like why that isn't just the answer, right? We've seen athletes play different sports and have other eligibility.
I believe,
right? Brandon Weeden did this. Yeah, 23, I think. But Drew Henson did this. Like, guys do it have done it in the past where they played baseball and football, whatever. Like, I don't understand why just because it's Australian rules football that's different from baseball. It's not the same sport. I know it's called football. It's not the same sport. And so it's very confusing to me. And I just want someone to just give us, honestly, even if I'm wrong, even if what I'm saying is completely incorrect, somebody just tell me what the final answer is so I never have to think about it again.
Yeah, it's just really really bizarre that it's kind of, again, this is one of the unusual circumstances. And so, again, I do not know if Alex Paquetta entering the portal maybe is kind of tipping a hand that Penn State knows that Riley Thompson is going to be back. I do not know that to be the case.
I'll say it doesn't feel like a bad sign for that, though, right? Like, it doesn't feel like...
It doesn't, but it's always hard to say, right? I think if you're Paquetta, you came here, you were on scholarship, you were here for 2 years, and to me, last year, they sent a message pretty loud and clear when they went out and got Riley Thompson in the portal, and that was, hey, you're coming in here to compete. And Thompson, of course, then wins the job. So I don't know if, again, if some, you know, these decisions often are just kind of made in a vacuum and Paquetta's going to do what's best for him. And that's great. And that's, you know, makes sense. So I don't know if it signals anything or not. But right now we're down the punter rabbit hole, which is a really, all things considered, that's a good spot to be in on portal day one. My colleague, Portal King, Max Olson at The Athletic, had shared that over 300 FBS players had entered the portal as of lunchtime Monday. Madness, just absolute madness.
Incredible.
One of the names of interest, just because it's the Big Ten and Penn State will play them next year, even though they'll no longer be in the same division, Ohio State quarterback Kyle McCord entered the portal. And John, I gotta admit, that was the first thing I saw when I opened Twitter this morning, because after that big Packers win last night, I slept in. I was up late, opened Twitter. And then at first I was like, it's not April Fool's Day. Is this a joke? Is this weird? And then the outlet that I saw it on, I clicked on their link and the link was broken. So I got an error message and I was like, this is bizarre. And then our buddy, friend of show, Bill Landis, he had it. And then I knew it was true. So you look at Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl, and then now we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah,
it's
got to be Devin Brown. Clearly, there must have been some very transparent conversations that happened behind the scenes there. But something that brings this a little bit full circle here for the Penn State audience, there's an Ohio State wide receiver who entered the transfer portal on Monday, whose name is Julian Fleming.
Yes.
Does that name sound familiar, John?
Former five-star wide receiver at Southern Columbia in Pennsylvania.
Catawissa zone,
Yeah, that's right. And Penn State was obviously recruiting him very hard, made several visits to Penn State. Well, now I have to say what I said earlier. I can't
run from the take. Let's go.
So John's
take for those of you, bring you up to speed. Julian Fleming enters the portal, and I think I texted it to you or something and said, like, wow, Penn State needs to be all over this. And your response,
yeah, John, that wasn't the exact phrasing.
Oh, no, actually, no, my rephrasing was, I wrote this year, was he would have been the best receiver on this roster this year.
Yeah. And I said, are we sure he's better than Dante Cephas? And frankly, I'm
No. There was another part to that, John.
Was it about me preparing to be publicly stoned for my take? Because I said that as well.
That. There was that. And you're like, well, I don't even know if Penn State would be interested in him.
I don't think I said that.
I don't even know if they would take him, I think was the phrasing.
That wasn't it. That
was definitely
like
it. That sounds like
no.
It.
I'll pull
it up right here.
I essentially said that I don't think he would be the best receiver at Penn State, right? Like, I think Dante Cephas is a better receiver than him. I think he is a better route runner. I think Julian Fleming is really good at winning physically, and I think he's a guy that you definitely take because he's such a good blocker. And he proved that at Ohio State, not something you necessarily want to be known for as a receiver, but helpful in the room, right? Like, helpful to get guys to buy in. But yeah, I think he's definitely someone that
you did say something nice about Mr. Fleming.
Yeah.
That he's a good blocker.
Yeah. See, I back up.
But you definitely did say it's there in the message that, I don't know if Penn State would even take him if they'd be interested. You got to absolutely try. You absolutely have to try.
Yeah,
for no sure. doubt. Now, can you put together a competitive NIL package, right? That's what all these things are at this point. But here's what Penn State is going for it. You've got a new OC, and you've got Drew Aller, and you've got Nick Singleton, and you've got a receiving core that needs a lot of help. You also have the perspective where you can say, hey, we're the in-state school. Maybe being close to home matters. Maybe it does not at all. And that's the thing with a lot of these situations. You don't know, right? Maybe Julian Fleming wanting to go farther away slightly to Ohio out of the gate mattered. Maybe that doesn't matter anymore now that he's older. Now, you are giving up being coached by Brian Hartline, which to me is a interesting thing. But you look at the talent that Ohio State has coming into that room. And there's a lot of it. And so I can see how you would say, hey, your career hasn't been that of a five-star prospect so far. We've got some studs coming in. Maybe it's best for both parties, right, if they kind of move on. I don't know. Obviously, I was not in those conversations. Yeah. But you do wonder kind of who maybe initiated that type of thing.
Well, to be clear, I did say I wonder if they'd even take him. I didn't say whether they should or shouldn't. I said I wonder. I digress. Semantics over here.
Semantics. But no, yeah.
Fleming has not been like overly productive, right? He had a decent year last year. He had 533 receiving yards on 34 receptions, 6 touchdowns. He played a good bit this year, especially when they didn't have Emeka Egbuka. But I think you know, tongue in cheek comments aside over
the
text,
ceiling like, is what it is.
Yeah. Well, see, this is the thing for me with Fleming. I think the ceiling might have been overblown because he was so much more physically advanced than the high school kids he was facing at Southern Columbia, right? Mm-hmm. Like that he looked like a legitimate.
It was a lower, and, yeah. They were like,
yeah,
what,
lower
1A,
classification,
yeah.
I believe so. And so he's like just destroying kids out there, and so then you get to a place where guys are kind of on that same level physically, and you lose that advantage. He's still a very good athlete. I don't think he's like a bad athlete or anything like that. But I do think he lost his primary advantage, which is that he's just stronger than everyone and more physical than everyone else. So I do wonder if he's ever going to be a true number one in a college program. We've only really got a year left to find out at this point. But I stand by what I said. I think Dante Cephas is the number one receiver in the on the roster right now. I think he would be the number one heading into next year. But I do think Fleming on some level would be a decent number two. I don't. Like, and
so you're omitting someone from the conversation.
No, I think Keandre Lambert-Smith, it was at his best in a role where he was the primary slot, right? Like, I think
so. That's
think
okay. Sorry, are you saying that Cephas is better than Kayla? Is that what am I
yes.
interpreting? Okay.
Yes. Gotcha, yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah. My omission isn't that I don't think he'll be here. It's that I just
okay. That's yeah.
Yeah, and I think a full offseason of Dante Cephas is also going to do wonders for him, right? Mm-hmm. I think we saw as he got more acclimated, he got better and better. You give him whatever it is, 8 months, I think that's only going to, mm-hmm. you know, increase tenfold. But yeah, I think I would rather have Cephas pretty much over any receiver on the roster right now heading into next season. That's not a knock on, you know, those guys. That I think Cephas is going to be good. I've been pretty adamant about that.
We know where you stand on Dante Cephas. That's right. Yeah.
And listen, I'm a person of conviction. Once I have a take, I tend not to back down unless proven otherwise or given evidence to the contrary, I should say. And I don't think we've seen enough evidence that he like can't be the guy essentially, mm-hmm. or at least a very, very good number two if they go get a number one. But I think Fleming would fit in well as another outside receiver. I mentioned the blocking, like that matters, I think, more than people realize. Like coaches want that buy-in, coaches want that consistency. He's got good hands. I think he struggles to separate a little bit, which we've seen has been a problem. But he's so physical at the catch point that I think you can get away with throwing it to him, maybe with less separation and trusting that he's going to win, which matters too. So I think Fleming would be a helpful addition without a doubt. I just don't know if the expectations that some may have of this is a former five-star recruit, he's a local kid, he was considering Penn State. I don't know if he's going to live up to five-star recruit billing wherever he goes,
right.
Penn State or not.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a lot of times, right, and Penn State kind of had and lived that experience with Justin Shorter, right? You say, hey, here's your marquee guy. And it never happened. I do wonder, John, because again, he's been developed by Brian Hartline, best in the business at what he does. If that's kind of all Hartline could get out of him, right? It's tough to see that the ceiling's going to be much higher, right? Now, sometimes change of scenery is good. And for whatever reason. It could
also just be more targets. You know, like I don't think that production, I think in 2022, I don't think is a ceiling for what he can do, but I think it's mm-hmm. a good example of how he can accomplish what he accomplishes. And I do think that, you know, if he just gets a higher target share, that the numbers could improve, maybe not like to 1,000-yard receiver, but where he could catch, you know, 50, 60 passes for 700 yards, right? Like, I think that's well within the realm of possibility. And Penn State sure as hell would have taken that last year, right? Like, they would have taken that in a heartbeat to add to this roster, and a guy that they can trust on a down-to-down basis. We heard James Franklin say it. We heard Marcus Hagan say it. They need consistency at wide receiver. They need consistency. And I think a large part of that is trusting guys to do what you need them to do and what they're supposed to do on a play. And I think Fleming can bring that. And I think that's going to be, you know, because here's the thing. I don't think they're going to take just one wide receiver. My guess is they try and get a high-end guy and then another guy to potentially start or rotate in. Again, a guess, and based on sort of where the roster's at, that's my assumption. And if that's the case, then, you know, you can take a guy that maybe isn't a bona fide number one and still sell to someone else like, hey, you're still going to be the main target here, right? Like, you're still going to be the main guy. Now, I don't know what Fleming's motivations are, right? Like, is he going to be fine with being a number two or a number three option? I don't know. But I do think he would have success. Honestly, because of the blocking, I think he's going to be valuable wherever he goes. It just remains to be seen if it's going to be as a pass catcher at the level that I think a lot of people anticipated.
Here we go, John. This is how long ago Julian Fleming committed to Ohio State. It was June of 2019, because I went to his commitment at his school in Catawissa and filed a story from like a Dairy Queen or something down the street. One of my shining moments in the industry.
June of 2019. I was not here yet.
Who was the receivers coach in June of 2019? That's what I was looking at my story. It was Jared Parker who... at the time, which I think is a good example of just how much things have changed around here, Fleming had built a relationship with Parker. So obviously that was a long time ago. So we'll see if anything develops there. Here's a nice photo I took of Julian, who had a very fancy car that day that he was driving as part of like a, I don't remember, there was a story with the car and it was just a very fancy car. I don't remember all of the details, but...
It definitely wasn't an NIL deal because that didn't exist.
Did not in 2019. But yeah, I mean, we'll see if something, anything kind of comes through there. I mean, I think Penn State overall has done a really nice job using the transfer portal to bolster the roster, right? They have not ignored it like Clemson has. I think they've been really smart with it. I do think as well that offensive tackles. Everybody's always looking for offensive tackles. Well, we know that Penn State absolutely is going to be doing that. John, I think they could benefit from another defensive tackle as well, right? I think some of those positions, but everybody's going to say the same thing, right? Everybody's going to want that. The closer you are to the ball, the longer it takes to develop your high school guys. So, you can kind of use the portal to your benefit there.
Wouldn't be surprised if corner is a target as well. Losing Johnny Dixon, Kalen King potentially. Kalen King, we don't know a decision yet. Dixon's out of eligibility. I think you want to add someone alongside Cam Miller. Taquan Hardy still has eligibility remaining. I will be interested to see what happens there. I think those are kind of the main spots. And then you, like James said, you take best player available. If you can add someone that's going to make your team better, you just take them and you deal with whatever comes of it, right? And he said they tell recruits that you're going to be competing with guys. They're going to bring guys in to take their jobs, right? And that's part of college football. That's how you recruit. That's how you coach.
And then you sort out the eligibility later if they're from Australia. You worry
and
about
then
that.
You figure out whether they're a sophomore or a senior in 3 years.
You know what would be the wild part of this offseason, John? What if, like, Riley Thompson either decides he's not coming back or he's out of eligibility, and then Penn State has to go into the portal and get another punter potentially again? That has been the one thing.
Throw Bakeda back on the roster.
Well, they've already deleted him from the roster. So, I think that's kind of the one area that we've seen consistently has been the specialists, right? And they did a really nice job of that this year. I will continue to pound the table that Alex Falcons was their most impactful transfer this year. You, as the Dante Cephas hype train conductor, might feel differently about that.
No, not most. Cephas wasn't more impactful, but Cephas is a better player. I just think that'll come to fruition more down the road. Back to what you said earlier, though, about Kyle McCord before we get too lost on that. I would not be surprised if Ohio State improves at quarterback in the transfer portal. Right? I don't think Kyle McCord is leaving if they think they're going to get worse at quarterback.
Yeah, I can't see it. I mean, I do think, right, which again, thinking back to James Franklin's comments Sunday night, when I had asked about the portal, I said, it officially opens for undergraduates on Monday. And he's like, well, it legally opens on Monday. And he's like, but some people have known, or basically where they've been going for a while. And like, isn't it interesting how that works? And, at the time, there's been a lot of portal tampering comments from coaches over the offseason. And it is what it is. But I just wonder, maybe this is me just connecting some dots, John. Maybe James Franklin kind of knows something that we don't about Ohio State's quarterback plans. I don't know. Makes you wonder, or it could just be a blanket statement because he's been consistent with kind of comments like that about the portal over time. But as soon as I kind of saw that this morning, I went, I wondered.
Right. Like, how can you be so confident to kind of, I don't know. I feel like Ohio State, if they wanted to keep Kyle McCord, probably could. Right. Like, that is my guess and my read on the situation.
Well, it takes
us
back to
quarterbacks like Riley Leonard in the portal, who I think a lot of people are already penciling in to go to Notre Dame as soon as he enters the portal.
Dante Moore is a really fascinating one in there.
Cam Ward at Wazoo, right? They don't have a conference thing. Well, I guess they do. They're calling the Pac-2 a conference. But Wazoo doesn't have a Power 5 conference to be in next year. And so Cam Ward would probably play really well at Ohio State. He'd be really interesting too because he's had more of a running dynamic to the offense. But they're going to have options to go get guys. Notre Dame will have options to go get guys. Miami, Oregon, Washington, all of these schools are going to be able to add guys. And that's why, I think high school quarterback recruiting still matters at the highest end, right, like at the very top end. But if you can't get one of those guys, if you can't get someone that you view as one of those guys, ignoring the recruiting rankings and whatnot, if they don't think that's like a high-end starter potentially soon, you can just go get a quarterback from someone else, right? Like, it seems that quarterbacks more than any other position go in the portal at a higher frequency. And part of that is only one guy starts the position. We saw Uyunglele went in the portal from Oregon State, and then Aiden Childs went in as well. And you're seeing Childs connected to Michigan State already, and Jonathan Smith, the old staff there. So, like, whole rooms can leave at quarterback in one offseason. So I do think that is something to consider moving forward. Drew Aller already made his commitment to be at Penn State next year. Drew Aller is going to be the starting quarterback, spoiler alert, as long as he's healthy. Like, he's going to be the guy next year. And Penn State doesn't have to worry about that next year. But if Drew Aller has the year that they think he can and he heads to the 2025 NFL draft, you know, if they don't know that Ethan Grunkmeyer or Bo Prabula could be that guy, they can also dip right into the portal and get one of those guys next year, because there are starting level quarterbacks and high end starting level quarterbacks that go in every single year. Two guys that a lot of people have on their Heisman ballots, actually all three quarterbacks that have been considered for the Heisman, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and Jaden Daniels, all transferred. Daniels started at Arizona State before going to LSU. Penix started in Indiana before going to Washington, following his former offensive coordinator at Indiana, Kalen DeBoer, who's now the head coach at Washington after like some years in between. And then Nix going to Oregon from Auburn, which, by the way, would have made that Oregon-Penn State matchup a lot of fun.
I kept thinking about that, John. You and your love of these Ducks that after last week you said you thought they were going to be getting in as the number three team. You were convinced of that Friday night. You were convinced that they were going to win. It's been a rough go around for you.
That I was wrong. That happens.
I couldn't hear that. What was that?
Listen, I am not afraid to admit when I'm wrong. I've been wrong plenty of times before. I will be wrong plenty of times in the future. It's okay. This part of this job is prognosticating things that are like unprognosticatable.
It is. We pick games every week. We got a 50-50 chance.
Yeah. And we predict exact scores too. We got pretty much no chance on those.
Yeah.
I think though that Oregon is in Washington and LSU to a different extent, because they didn't have as much success, but that's on the defense this year, are proof that like a transfer can come in and have a lot of success. In Nix's case, it's like he had it pretty quickly, right? So I think, that is reason to believe in that, like quarterback recruiting, I think, changes from here on out. Like, I just don't think it's going to look the same as long as the portal exists in the way that it does. You look at Penn State's opponent, Ole Miss, and we'll get more in depth on Ole Miss later, but just as a broad overview, their quarterback, Jackson Dart, transferred in from USC. Their running back, Quinshon Judkins, is a guy that's been there, right? They have a backfield of a guy that, you know, went to the West Coast first and a guy that decided to go to Ole Miss right away. It's a different world in college football. I do think that this matchup is going to be really interesting, though, and it is one that I'm very much looking forward to. Like I said, we will dive into a lot of it later, but this is philosophically, these are two different coaches from the portal standpoint, even. James has gone and gotten guys that he thinks are fits and like upgraded at positions. Lane Kiffin has like taken pretty big swings in the portal pretty much every offseason, right? Like, I don't think it's been a secret that he will go after guys in the portal and will go get guys that he needs in the portal.
No, I think the other part of this, the quarterback piece I wanted to make sure we touched on is, you know, yeah, high-end guys are going to be available, but they're going to be available at a price, right? That's the other thing. Matt Rhule had the comment last week about, you know, kind of $1 million being the going rate with NIL for a quarterback. That Talia Tagovailoa told me at Media Days that an unnamed SEC team last offseason offered him $1.5 million. So I do wonder if maybe to some extent you see all these quarterbacks going in there thinking, hey, I'm going to go in there and then I'm going to get a bunch of money and it's going to be guaranteed. Like, that's still not the case. Which is where, right, this is not how this thing works. But again, we're dealing with 18 to 22 year olds and kind of with some folks, whoever is maybe navigating that re-recruitment behind the scenes or whatnot, it gets interesting.
People with vested interests in the financial aspect of the player being in the portal can really alter things, right? I want to be as diplomatic as I can in saying that. But yeah, I think that we see that a lot. Like, you will see guys go in the portal, and they'll just not find a destination, right? And they'll drop down a level, and because they either made the wrong decision or didn't receive proper guidance.
We saw
the school that they're at, like, essentially told them they're not going to play. So if they want to play, they need to leave, right? Like, we see that happen, I think, all the time. Deion Sanders was pretty blunt about it, right?
Flipped an entire roster.
Telling guys to leave, essentially.
To be clear, that happens everywhere, but just not to as not obvious or as outward of a conversation, right? I wanted to say there was a familiar portal name today. Not that this means anything for, I'm not connecting dots here for Penn State, but linebacker Jamari Budden, former Nittany Lion, transferred. Now he's back in the portal. We're in the era of college football where you're going to get some multi-transfer guys. But like you said, not everyone who enters is going to exit the portal with a either a landing spot or a good landing spot.
Or a better situation than they were in.
Frankly. Right, right. But
there are, I think that there is a scenario here that is a lot of fun, though, that I really enjoy in FCS guys hopping up a level. Minnesota got their transfer quarterback from, I believe he was at the FCS level, right? Googling his name because I totally got it before we were coming on. Yeah, Frosmer. There we go. He was at New Hampshire, and he's transferring to Minnesota. And Akin Kalyakmanis, their previous starting quarterback, is in the portal as well. By the way, 10 out of 10 to me on the name pronunciation there.
Yeah, I'm impressed, John. I'm impressed.
That's what we do. But no, Brosmer has 1 year left. He's going to be he was in his third year starting at New Hampshire. So, like, they're getting an experienced guy, a guy who gets to step up a level. And I really enjoy those because it's, like, fun to watch these guys who are doing, you know, the FCS level. How does it translate? Cam Ward was like that, right? He was at Incarnate Word. And then he bumped up to Wazoo, has had a lot of success, and now he's clearly on the move again. So it does go the other way, too, by the way, with Uyunglele started at Clemson, moved on to Oregon State, and now potentially up again, right, to another Power 5 school. This is all very interesting to me. I know a lot of people don't like it. I think the transfer portal is fascinating. I wish I didn't have to spend so much time on Twitter because of it. That makes it less fun.
A lot of Twitter notifications I've set up for people that I think maybe are potential portal entrants, right? A lot of scrolling, a lot of asking people back and forth. That's this time of year. But yeah, we're inching closer to bowl season. We do know we're not sure when Penn State is going to actually introduce their new OC. At some point that's going to happen, presumably this month. Your dog's had enough, John.
Reese has invited himself into this conversation.
I like it. I like it a lot. But we do know that Penn State will have their bowl media day here. I believe it's December 15th. So that's probably the next time that we'll hear from players.
It should be around then. I don't know if it's official that it'll be that day, though.
Yeah, somewhere around then. Usually it's typically been the Friday of finals week. So you never know, right? Like, who's going to be coming or going. We will have our eyes peeled. John, is there... I think actually, you know what this is? I think Reese, your dog, is feeling a little bit of envy about Juice Kiffin getting so much attention from the Peach Bowl. Did you catch any of those tweets?
No, I did not. But what is actually happening is he is hearing me talk after he was asleep for the last like 3 hours, and now he can't handle the fact that I'm up here. Listen, he may sound menacing. He's a 25-pound corgi. He's very small. He's not harming anybody anytime soon.
Unless it's people like me with bad pet allergies, then we are all over
that. That's true. In which case, we allow him to get as close to you as possible.
Yes.
No, a very good boy who is acting up down there, which I think is a good sign.
That's
probably as good of a signal as any, as he listens to me like bump my knee off the desk and reacts like that because of it. But that'll do it for this week's episode of the Nittany Dispatch, as Reese has let you know. If you want to read Audrey's work, you can find it at The Athletic. You can find her on Twitter at oddsnyder4. You can find my work at Center Daily Times at centerdaily.com, CENTRE. You can find me on Twitter at John Sauber, no H in John, as always. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.